How's it going, everybody? Andrew Zarian here, Wrestling Observer Live. We're here every day, Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. East, and Sundays, 6 p.m. East. But it's not 6 p.m., 4 p.m. East. We're doing a show a little bit early today. If you notice, we're not on Sports Byline this week. I think we're back next week on Sports Byline. I'll go into it throughout the week about what happened there. I think Brian will fill you guys in also what's going on. But everything's good. We'll be back next Sunday on Sports Byline. But here's a special treat here today. I have no commercial breaks. I have no interruptions. I have no producer today. I have no editor today. But you know what I do have? I have Dave Meltzer here today with me. So he's going to be joining me in a little bit on the phone. He's going to be calling in. Also, I'm going to be joined by Matt Ryan of Catalyst Wrestling again. You guys loved him the last time he was on, and I think it's an important day for someone from the world of independent wrestling to come on with GCW running their first official, I guess, traditional pay-per-view as far as how cable works. And of course it's on digital also with Fight and everything. But I thought I would have him on also to talk about this because this is a big show, especially here in New York City. I will not be at the show. I should have planned ahead. I should have bought the tickets, but I did have a weekend with my wife. So I was not going to go to the show, but I do think there's a lot to talk about here, and I'm going to be really excited to do this uninterrupted. This is the first time I'm doing the show without any breaks. I think if you guys have been listening to the show for the last, 20 some odd years, you know how the breaks work. Sometimes you're on a roll. Sometimes you get Dave on a roll and you got to say, hey, Dave, listen, I got to go on a commercial break. And then you start all over again. We're not doing that today. We're going to be live for the next hour, talking all things professional wrestling. And guess what? I think we have Dave on the line. Hey, Dave, is that you?
Yep.
Hey, Dave Meltzer on the line, everybody. I always feel like I have to do an intro for you because, like, traditionally when you bring someone in on a show, you got to do an intro. But everybody knows who you are here.
Yeah.
No intro needed. Dave, yeah. Thank you for coming on, obviously. A little short notice a couple days ago, but, of course, you said thank you. I'll come on, and I'm very appreciative of it. There's a lot going on, and I thought this would be a good topic to start off because I kind of got my butt handed to me over my NXT statement a couple days ago. I sent you an email and I sent you a tweet and we were talking about it. I spoke to Brian about this also, but the restructuring of NXT has been a topic that a lot of fans want to get more information about as to why and how and what's going on. And you know, obviously, we don't know everything, and we can't go into everything, but I do think this is a good good opportunity to talk about this. In the long run, do you think this reshuffling is going to work for them, as far as, the back-end stuff and even the presentation of the product?
So far, it hasn't. It's too early to say long run. I mean, I understand what they're trying. It also hasn't worked, and it's also stripped the company of what its popularity thing was. The thing that made it the cool thing, it's all pretty much gone, and now it's purely developmental with guys that are very green. I mean, even years ago when it was developmental, you had a lot of independent guys with a lot of experience, so you had some really cool matches, and you had JR announcing and things like that. This is back on the early network days before it, even pre-takeover. And now it's it's just a lot of very green talent on national television, which makes it worse in some ways. But, in the long run, is the new thing going to work? I mean, I think that one of the things is they probably looked at the old thing and just go, like, this isn't performing at the level that we want it to, so we got to make changes, and these are the changes that they made. And also, the idea of NXT as a touring group, obviously, with the pandemic, has been completely dropped. They don't even do local house shows. So it's all about just, they've turned it into just pure developmental with the kind of people who they think have a future on the main roster. And, we know how they think about talent. I mean, it's the real interesting thing is the dichotomy of the Vince McMahon feeling of talent and the Tony Khan feeling of talent. And in the long run, not that this is the be-all and end-all, but it's a very key thing in what's going to happen going forward. Tony Khan's idea is to use, really good wrestlers that are experienced and make their way through and everything. And Vince's idea is to find good-looking people and train them to be, with the right people with the right look. By good-looking, I mean good bodies and whatever, and train them to be pro wrestlers, because that's what will draw you money when they're good enough and they're being trained for the main roster. And the thing on that is because I can certainly recall OVW when they first started. The difference was OVW was this little cocoon, and outside of Louisville, nobody saw it. And I think that it's probably best with that mentality to not be on, even on the network, to do like a local thing and probably give the people some local house shows in the area and just do on like a local station and have people not see them. Because by seeing them, you're kind of like showing people, you know, the first impression's always like the lasting one, and you're seeing a whole bunch of people the first time you see them, they're not ready, and you just kind of go, they're not that good. It'd be so much better if it's 2 years down the road, the first time you really see these guys, especially on television, and they're a lot more polished, and they still have the good look. You know, I think that that's probably better in the long run, but they have this TV show that they have to fill 2 hours every Tuesday night. So this is what they're filling it with.
I mean, even if the show was an hour, I think it would be a far easier show to watch, especially with, you know, considering it's developmental. You know, I don't know if you were said the same thing. I was told I called somebody over there early in the week when to kind of touch on a report online. Russell Votes had a report, and M Plus is kind of piggybacked on the Toronto Star story. But essentially what was said to me, and this is, I mean, I've heard this over the last year, that model of NXT that people fell in love with was unsustainable moving ahead in 2022. And I asked them what they meant by that, if they meant financially or just the way that they were training people. And the example was, give me the top stars over the last, NXT, PC, developmental era from like 2013 on, who were the top guys that came out of there onto the main roster that were developmental guys? And really, if you think about it,
very few. The women.
The women, they've done night and day, right? Astronomically, yeah. What an improvement over how they train them. But as far as the men go, it would be Baron Corbin, Braun Strowman, and maybe FTR, if you're going to consider them, you know, homegrown.
But they'd worked indies forever.
Yeah. So
I would not I wouldn't consider like them or Adam Cole or anything like that. Those people were all experienced people and really good. Jason Jordan and Chad Gable could have fit in that category.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's you know, it's funny because I had a conversation with somebody there. It was the last time they were in San Jose, and one of the things that I sort of said was that a lot of the athletes that go there that were brought in, because remember, they recruited all kinds of great athletes, and so many of them, like in the old days when you would recruit great athletes, some of them just didn't like wrestling and would quit. But for the most part, the ones who liked wrestling, they would make it and often make it big. Not everyone, because some people didn't have the charisma. But the thing is you had these guys coming in, and just throw Baron Corbin's name out just because it fits. Who's, you know, good enough athlete to have had a cup of coffee in the NFL. I mean, I don't think he ever played in a regular season game, but he was in camp. But he's a big guy, agile guy, you know, good athlete. And he comes in, and he's used to kind of everywhere he's gone being like, you know, a really good athlete. Maybe on an NFL roster, not so good, but, you know, like all through high school and everything like that, he was a better athlete than everybody. Goes into this new thing, professional wrestling, goes in this training school knowing nothing, and he's in there with these guys that have had 15 years of experience, and they're running rings around him. And it can be very disheartening to be like the worst guy. And some guys may thrive on that and improve, but for a lot of guys who are used to being the front runners, it's really tough. And I was, you know, it was almost like by having so many great guys like the Johnny Garganos and everything there, you'll have these guys come in and go, oh my God, like this is, I could never do this, or these guys are so far ahead of me, I'm trying this, and it's like, you almost like mentally give up, and I thought that was one of the reasons why their ability to make these athletes into top pro wrestlers, you know, there are, you know, a few, you know, I mean, Roman Reigns, Bray Wyatt, you know, became big stars and all, but they're also both second generation guys who grew up. I mean, as far as like pure guys with no connection to the business that came to the PC that were like good college football players that end up being, you know, quality WWE guys for the amount of people that, you know, or great amateur wrestlers, You know, I mean, like, yeah, Gable and Jordan. And Jordan didn't end up panning out due to injury. But it's like the number is very, very small.
Very.
And it is like, I mean, that is something. So I'm not saying that's the reason. I'm sure it's not, actually. But it is something that I had been thinking about for years when Sami Zayn and Finn Balor and those guys were in NXT and they were recruiting all these, you know, national champion, you know, or all-American wrestlers that would come in, and they would never get anywhere. And my thought was is that they're just looking at these guys who are so much better pro wrestlers than them and just get frustrated, and it's mentally difficult. You know, when you're a national champion wrestler, you've been running through people. You're through from high school all through college, running through people for the most part. And I'm not saying it comes easy to you because you had to work hard for it, but you weren't starting out, like, so much worse than everybody. And that's I think that there is something to that. I mean, as far as unsustainable financially, I mean, I don't know the whole situation, but the one thing is that with what they are doing, they desperately, I mean, I wouldn't put them on television, but they have to fill the airs, but they desperately need the house shows. Even if there are house shows in front of 300 people, they need to get that Florida thing going. And I know originally it was going to start July of last year, and now it seems like it's never going to start. And so because of that, these guys are going to progress a lot slower, and that's going to make it even more frustrating.
Yeah, when I asked about that Florida loop, I was told a couple months ago that it's not in the plans. So
yeah, it's not in the plans anymore. It was in the plans. It was in the plans at the start of last year to, you know, to go not to tour anymore. I mean, I did hear no more national touring, which I could sort of understand because they didn't have the horses. Like if they went with the crew that they have now, national touring, they wouldn't do very well. But you know, again, like if you're in like a 200 or 300 seat little building in Florida. But one of the problems, I mean, I remember being told is that, like, oh, you know, go to some of these cities where the people are really anti-vax and it would be COVID problems and everything like that. And that was an issue at 1.2. Yeah. I mean, there's so many different issues, but they, at some point, I know it's not in the plans, but if you're going to have like these guys that, you know, again, like you're looking, I just did the thing in this new issue, talking about how many matches these people have. You're talking about like people having 13 matches in a year, 20 matches in a year.
Yeah, which is not enough at all.
10 matches in a year. To improve, you know, you need way more than that. So it's like they need to get these guys, they need to get these guys ring time, or they're going to go on the main roster and they're not going to be ready.
No, absolutely, and
they, or they're never going to make it to the main roster.
Yeah, and then you have the other side of things where, you know, and this was interesting that this name was brought up to me multiple times, and Nakamura has been brought up to me as an example of not that NXT didn't work, but Nakamura is used as an example of he should have never been there, and it was wasted time for him to be there. And I think now in 2022, when you have so much television competition, whether or not you consider AEW competition as far as, you know, ratings go, or which they are competition, they're competing ratings wise. They're competing as far as the key demo goes very aggressively with Raw. So a guy like a Nakamura or even a Keith Lee that was in developmental. I mean, this guy was one of the hottest commodities on the independent circuit. I saw him tons of times and he was having classic matches in the middle, you know, at La Boom in the middle of a nightclub for Evolve. And then you put him in NXT and you don't show him on TV. You keep him there for a while, and then finally he's on TV, you put the title on him, you move him to the roster, and things fall apart. To me, what this person was saying was that we had it all wrong. We ended up having to become competition on TV. We ended up becoming Ring of Honor-esque, and it kind of fell apart as far as the main goal of NXT. And I don't know if you've heard that or not, or if that's kind of the same message.
Yeah, no. The original goal of NXT was to develop talent, and instead they wanted to be... Basically, what happened was Ring of Honor was starting. This was in the Young Bucks, Cody Rhodes era of Ring of Honor, and where Ring of Honor was starting to get a buzz, and they didn't, you know, WWE is with WWE. I'm not saying they don't want anyone else doing pro wrestling. There's a period when they didn't want anyone else doing pro wrestling. I think now it's kind of like the UFC mentality. I think they're actually both very similar in the sense that they know that they need other people doing pro wrestling, but they don't want anyone doing it at a high level. Like, they don't really want anybody else on television. But, you know, as far as local pro wrestling, they don't want to stomp that out. But they don't want it to get too popular either. If it gets too popular and gets too much of a buzz, they want to, like happened in the UK. Well, the UK was basically to stop ITV in its tracks.
Look at pre-COVID, it was getting really depressing. But even now, it's really devastated.
Yeah, UK's devastated. I mean, the thing is that they were, you know, Ring of Honor was getting popular, and they figured, like, why don't we do our own Ring of Honor? We can sign up all of their top guys and bring them into the thing and do the same thing, but with our production and everything like that. And Ring of Honor will go down, and we'll have that audience, that Ring of Honor audience. That was, like, the mentality. And for a time, I mean, it worked. They were, you know, they were, and may have continued to work. But I think that what happened, I think that the 2 hours of TV and making it a fight on Wednesday, you know, they lost the fight. And, yeah. And that was the beginning of the end, you know, because you also had the thing from the top of, like, you know, these guys lost the fight, and now we don't want it to be that anyway. We don't want, you know, we can't compare. But they still got the 2 hours to fill. Once you're on national TV putting on a subpar product,
doesn't work.
Which, yeah, I think it's not a good. I don't think if I'm WWE, I do not want a subpar product on television.
Yeah, even people within WWE, and some of these guys I've had really honest discussions with, where, you know, sometimes you talk to someone, you're like, okay, they're playing the company line, you know, they're not going to say anything bad. And other times, like even with NXT when they were on the network. Out of that taping of whatever, let's say the bulk of four shows, two were fantastic. The other two, you could watch it or you could not, but it didn't really matter. And when they transitioned to 2 hours, they had that problem.
It was a 1 hour show, and it was an easy watch.
Fantastic. Easy,
and there was
easy.
And there's no pressure on ratings because nobody, you know, the only people who had them was them. And it didn't matter because as long as the guys were getting television experience. You just basically say, you know, it's fine. You have developmental money. It's a loss leader. Every product, you know, does developmental, so to speak. You know, I mean, it's like they don't have college football, so they got to create their own college football for the NFL. So, I mean, developmental is needed. It's just a question of what is the right developmental. I mean, like, they had very good success for a little while with OVW, and then they didn't. Then they moved everything to Florida, and it really wasn't that successful. And then they had that period where they got very aggressive, but yeah, like the success of you know, NXT was so much of the Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Finn Balor, Pac. You know, that era. The women were the ones that they can really hold their hat on. But I mean, that was. Yeah, I mean, those people, like, really, every one of them had years and years and years of experience. And, you know, maybe they'll say NXT helped in the transition because there is a transition of doing Lucha Libre in Mexico and WWE, and maybe this is a good transition. There is a transition from New Japan, whatever. But I don't know that Finn Balor needed all that time there, and clearly Kevin Owens didn't because he was only there for a little while, and he was fine on the main roster. But you know, they wanted that idea that, like, I remember they would, in the prospectus or the business stuff, would be like 68% of our main roster talent, you know, came through NXT. And it's like, yeah, 10 years of independence,
finishing,
you know,
school, six, right? That's how they months, saw
six
it.
Month, 6 months of NXT, you know, it's not really NXT, you know. But using it as a way to say, like, look, we're developing all this new talent. It's like, you know, you've self-developed some, but, you know, really considering the amount of money, less than you should have. But you know, if this group that they have now in 3-4 years all turns out, or not all, they won't all, but it, like, if a lot of them turn out to be stars, then it was successful. And it's like too early to tell. But yes, it did absolutely veer away from the original intent. And now it's back to the original intent because, you know, they were out there trying to compete in ratings with AEW and, you know, at first kill AEW. And then when that was unkillable, keep them down. And then, you know, that didn't work either. So then they, you know, went to the new thing that they're doing.
Yeah, their philosophy has totally shifted, which I find interesting. Now, the big question here is what happens with Hunter, right? I mean, what do you see? How do you see this playing out with, you know, this is not Hunter's NXT. I don't think it'll ever be his NXT again. Have you heard?
No, I mean, I see, you know, Vince McMahon fingerprints all over that show. It's exactly what I would expect from a Vince show. I mean, as far as Paul, you know, I mean, here's the thing. It's like, I don't know what his goal, when you've had the health scare he's had with three daughters and everything, it's like your priorities change greatly, or should. I don't know if he would even want that stress now. Maybe he would. Maybe he wants to go right back. And look, he loves wrestling. It's something he's watched since he was a kid. He's not that old to where it's like he wants to ride off in the sunset, although I can't imagine him ever wrestling again. But I guess that's possible, too. But I don't know what he wants. Like, it may be something where he doesn't, I mean, I would, like, as a friend, kind of say, like, you don't need the stress. You've got the money in the bank, and, you know, the family's never going to be wanting. And take care of your health, because it's the most important thing in your life. And running NXT is a high stress. You've got all of these athletes all trying for your attention. There's all these different things, you know, pulling each other, you know, apart. And that may, you know, be part of what the health issue was, is the fact that he had all that going on, and it's, you know, 100-hour a week work week, which is a tough deal.
Very tough deal. Very tough deal. Listen, at the end of the day, you know, when people look back at this era, they look back at NXT and developmental and what they did. Hunter's going to be a big topic of discussion because he was the driving force behind this boom in developmental talent or unheard of talent, not nationally exposed talent. For some of them, you know, he had the right eye to pick the best of the best and bring them in and really created a fantastic era. I know plenty of people that got back into professional wrestling because of NXT, single-handedly.
Yeah. I mean, it was always wild. I always thought it was not necessarily... Sometimes I used to think it was counterproductive where I would watch a Saturday night NXT show and then a Sunday pay-per-view.
It was so good.
Show, yeah. And the NXT show would blow away the pay-per-view, yeah. And it's kind of like... God, it sort of exposes your main roster, and you know, and the fans are so much more, you know, thrilled and everything. But the reality is the NXT, you know, didn't grow in popularity in the sense of, you know, it really wasn't the main brand, even if it was the better brand. And it's also a lesson, you know, about how important location is and production is and things like that. That you can go in there and have way, 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 way better matches and way, way, way better atmosphere. But the masses still want to see the people who are presented on the show that seems to be the more important show. I mean, it's interesting to, you know, and again, it's like minor league baseball is never going to outdraw major league baseball, even if they play more exciting games. And a prelim fight on a UFC show that's absolutely fantastic is never going to get the talk of a main event on it, you know, even if the prelim fight blows it away. I mean, yeah. It may get some talk, but in the long run, are those guys in that prelim fight going to draw on the next, you know, on the pay-per-view big numbers as compared to the, you know, pay-per-view main eventers that are established on top? You know, it's people want to see what they perceive to be most important. And the one thing, as great as NXT was, and this may be, you know, you can maybe second guess that late 2019 period where they were in Survivor Series and everything, and Paul was talking about third brand, and maybe if they had really treated it as a third brand and upped the production, maybe they could have beaten AEW, and maybe it would have been a successful third brand, and maybe that's something that they would want, but they didn't follow up on the third brand thing. It became, you know, less and less a third brand and more our minor leagues, and our minor leagues has a built-in limitation. And, you know, in that sense, by going against their major leagues, you know, originally the idea was that they were going to beat them, and they certainly didn't. And that was because the perception became that, hey, you know, Adam Cole came in and beat Bryan Danielson. So, man, I mean, he should be up there in big, big matches, and that didn't happen. There was no follow-up. You know, I mean, Charlotte Flair goes down there and beats everyone, and it's like, okay, that's cool, because in the end, someone's going to beat her. You know, Rhea Ripley's going to beat her at the end, and it's going to make Rhea a bigger star. And then when that never happens, it more and more drives into people. It's like they're just the minor leaguers. And that was the worst. That was the kiss of death for them as far as being competition for AEW. And also, you know, the fact that so many of the ones went to the main roster and then weren't given a push, weren't even given a chance. And then it's like kind of like if you're a WWE fan who kind of wants to see the future of WWE, and you watch and you see, this guy, he's NXT champion. He's going to come to WWE and do something, and then he does nothing. Then it's kind of like, why am I spending 2 hours watching this minor league stuff where none of these guys pan out?
So now we have, to kind of veer, and this kind of plays a part. You brought up a third brand for WWE. You know, there's been a lot of discussion. Can we use another, you know, a major organization, a third national brand in North America? You know, we have an abundant amount of talent right now that's nowhere on TV with all the recent releases. And you know, obviously AEW is going to be releasing some people soon, also with contracts expiring. Do you think there is a place in pro wrestling right now on TV that you could have a competitive third brand on there?
I don't want to say no 100%, but you're going to need really strong TV, and I don't know if you can get that.
And you need a lot of money. That's the other part.
Ton of money. Well, you know, the thing is there's a lot of talent out there, but there's no Kenny Omegas and Chris Jericho out there.
Yeah.
You know, the people, the you know, Young Bucks, the people at the level where you can use them as the building blocks for other people. I mean, there's a lot of private parties out there, but private party without these other guys would never be anything. And, you know, Darby Allin, who did make it pretty big, you know, because he was whatever, you know, he worked with Cody Rhodes and he worked with all these other people, and they linked Sting with him and everything, and they made him into a star, and they made Britt Baker into a star and things like that. But that's because they had some stars to make them. If you go in there with, you know, guys that were not stars in WWE, even if they were very good workers, and you're going to use them, that's like, you know, American Wrestling Federation and all these people that tried to compete as the third group. The only one who really had any, what I would call limited success, was ECW, and that was because they were doing a completely different product. And even then, you know, I mean, ECW on today's scene, if they could get broadcast rights, maybe they would have even made it. But without, you know, ECW didn't, you know, was never financially strong either. But it did have, they at least had a cult following, and they did draw to a degree on pay-per-view and everything. I mean, they were, you know, at times they were probably more popular than WCW when WCW was dying, but with weaker TV. But still, I mean, like, it was still TNN, which was a real station. You'd need to get the station. You'd need a lot more money than ECW had because the stakes are higher. You basically need a TV station going like, hey, we want to get in the wrestling business and we're going to fund it. It's not like, oh, we've got all these people that WWE cut. We've got a bunch of guys that AEW is going to cut that have been on TV, and we can put, you know, familiar faces on TV. You know, Matt Cardona is like, that's not going to work, you know, without the TV to back it. You know, that's Impact, and Impact has TV, but it's, you know, I mean, you can see the numbers that it does and the buzz that Impact has right now. You know, it's there. It's being kept alive by a television station because they want wrestling on their TV station, but it's not a, you know, it's a television station that's doing 100,000 viewers, not a television station where you put it on and do 600,000 viewers or something.
You know, it's a very fascinating time in pro wrestling with everything going on. You know, WWE right now, they have solidified themselves as something other than pro wrestling. They've been telling us this for 25 years, and finally I think it's happening. I don't know if I mentioned this to you, but going to All Out and seeing what a fantastic show that was, and being a couple weeks prior, being at SummerSlam and seeing what a spectacle that was, you could really feel, like, especially for the big shows, like, these are two very different, they have two very different philosophies. Yeah, they kind of look the same and they're doing the same thing in the ring, but it's not the same thing. Their overall, I guess, mission statement, or whatever they conceptualize, whatever their version of wrestling is very different. AEW, I lean towards a little bit heavier because it's the wrestling that I grew up with and I'm very comfortable with. WWE has become a television product, and
it's always been though. Yeah, the goal is still to make stars, though. You know, and the jury is out. There's so many arguments you can make, but the jury's really out on which philosophy is better at creating the larger audience. You know, people will look at WWE and go, well, they have the larger audience, but that's a lot of that is the 30-year head start, 50-year head start. So you don't really know. In the long run, you know, as, you know, one group is going up more than the other, so, but that's, you know, but they still have to get to a certain point to where you say, like, okay, they're now actually more popular. I mean, they're close in some ways, closer than I would have imagined in some ways, but I still, like, if you go, like, what's the more popular group? It's WWE, and it's not really that close in the big picture. In some circles, it is close, and they are better at getting people to go to their live shows, which is a real feather in their cap that they are. But still, WWE is still the name brand that everyone grew up with, and that's an inherent huge advantage. And being based in the Northeast is also a huge advantage, as opposed to being, you know, people don't even really know where AEW is based. I guess it's Jacksonville, Florida, but you have Jacksonville, Florida versus, you know, right, the outskirts of New York.
Yeah.
I mean, in that wrestling war, people, we would always go, if it was Jim Crockett who was running Madison Square Garden and Boston Garden and Philadelphia Spectrum, and it was Vince McMahon running the Charlotte Coliseum, does it end differently? And I'm pretty sure it does.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, and that's a huge, it's not as big an advantage now as it was in the 80s, but it's still a big advantage. The incumbency's a giant advantage.
Yeah, I think now, you know, for AEW, they've done a fantastic job at, you know, bringing a lot of these disenfranchised fans back. I remember when we were talking about when AEW is going to show up on TNT and what their first episode of ratings are going to be. Everybody that I spoke to that are you know, quote unquote industry insiders with television, they were telling me if they do anything above 750, it's going to blow their minds. And they did a million.
Oh no, I mean I could tell you, and I know people who were in wrestling. And, I mean, they were going 400 to 500.
400 to 500, yep. That is exactly
because
what I
400
heard.
400 to 500, 0.2, you know, 0.2 was the basic thing. And this includes people in TNT who are just like, you know what I'm going to call, like, what are you looking for? And it's like, well, you know, don't listen to the rating number because, you know, the viewer number because we really don't care. But 400 to 500 would be, like, a good number to throw out. But 0.2 is what we're looking at.
Interesting.
And, obviously, they've never fallen as low as an 0.2. I think the lowest they got, I think they once got to 0.24 on a Wednesday, which was when they were not doing well. But, you know, they blew away what most industry insiders thought. I mean, a lot of fans thought differently. But they ended up being more right than the industry insiders.
Yeah, listen. Sometimes the people that are in the know are the ones that are really not. You know, they're kind of blinded by all their analytics and everything. And that happens to me too. I get. You know, my background's in marketing and business and sales, and a lot of these guys I know. And they, when AEW started out, I heard that 500,000 number, and when I even brought up, can they do a million? It was almost like impossible. I hope so, but there's no indicator pointing it, and there would be no indicator. Turner hadn't had wrestling on for 20 some odd years. You know, the landscape is different, and we're realizing that the fan base is very different. Yeah, of course, there's crossover, and you can talk about this with Brian Weekly, but the crossover isn't as much as people would imagine. It's not like 90% of WWE's audience, Raw's audience, is tuning into AEW. It's not like that at all.
I used to get the from one of the cable companies, and I wish I still did, but I would get, like, the Friday night crossover. And I never did a Monday night to Friday night, but when the NXT thing started, when Rampage started, I got the crossover of Rampage and SmackDown, and it was, you know, I forgot the numbers, but it was like 12 to 16% of the Raw audience would watch even a minute of AEW. I mean, of the SmackDown audience, I should say, would watch like a minute of AEW. It was not much of a... I mean, it absolutely exists. This is not watching the whole show of each. This is 1 minute of each show. You know, like, because look, I mean, even people who I know that aren't WWE fans, they could watch a minute of SmackDown before they're, you know, even if it's the last minute of the show, and that would count. And there's not, you know, even throwing that in, or vice versa, where you're a SmackDown fan, oh, let's go to TNT and watch the first minute of Rampage. I don't like it, but let's just watch it. And that number is really small. I mean, when we did the thing with the pay-per-views, and granted, you know, that's a different metric, but the WWE still had, at that time, a lot of pay-per-view buyers. They don't really now, but, you know, when AEW started in 2019, there were, you know, they would do 20, 30,000 pay-per-views and more for Mania. It's not a small number.
No, not at all.
And most of them did not buy AEW shows. I mean, very few of them did. The AEW audience was a different audience. Now, it was the AEW audience on, you know, subscribing to the network and still watching the pay-per-views? Yes, some of them were, but most of them weren't.
Yeah, very interesting stuff. Now, before I let you go, obviously, you're busy. We got GCW tonight. I have Matt Ryan calling in about 30 minutes from Catalyst Wrestling, talk about independent wrestling right now with me. But, you know, how important is this for... wrestling in general, or even independent wrestling, you know, a third or fourth or fifth company to be able to run a venue like the Hammerstein, you know, GCW did it with no TV, and they sold it out based on, you know, online marketing and star power on that card. What's your opinion on what they're doing tonight with GCW?
Well, I mean, it does remind me of ECW in a lot of ways before they had national TV. I mean, they did... And, you know, they were able to go places where they had no local TV and draw based on the buzz of ECW. And I think GCW has it, and ACW had it when the you know, social media was far, far less. So, I mean, I can see, I mean, what ECW did to me was more impressive, but that doesn't, you know, these guys may be in the early stages and everything like that. You know, more power to them. Everybody that runs independents wants to be in their shoes to where they could go in there and sell out a 2,000-seat building, you know, and you know, and even go in and tour nationally and go into these places, like draw 800 people in Los Angeles, whatever it is, a couple times a year, and sell it out, you know, yeah. Sell out Los Angeles or do 1,400 people in the suburbs of Chicago and sell it out. I mean, it's very, very impressive what they've done. You know, I mean, a lot of it was Nick Gage, you know, and he's not on the show. You know, a lot of tonight's show is the fact that there's a lot of familiar names on it. It's not just their guys, and a lot of them are AEW guys, which I find very interesting, because I just find it interesting that, you know, like, it's one thing, like, for Tony Khan to let guys do house shows, but it's another thing to let them do pay-per-view shows. I mean, real pay-per-view, not even internet pay-per-view, but real television pay-per-view. You know, I mean, he just wants to be friends with everyone and wants to, you know, I mean, I think that the sum of it is like to be the opposite of what WWE is. WWE's convinced everyone that, oh, you know, our guys, you'll never see them on anything but our shows, and we would never let them do this. And AEW is letting, you know, Moxley, one of their top guys, Eddie Kingston, who's not on the show but was originally going to be on the show, you know, also, you know, one of their top guys, you know, Ruby is on the show. Let them do it and let them be on pay-per-view. That's a, you know, that's a very interesting thing, you know, and it's, I think that it's a good experiment for Tony to think outside the box rather than have these, you know, people will go like, well, this isn't what WWE does. It's minor league. It's like, yeah. You know, I mean, maybe it's not. Sometimes those out of the box ideas work.
Listen, maybe we talk about AEW running a stadium show. This is a discussion you've had with Brian multiple times. We talk about it on Mat Men all the time. I spoke about it with Garrett a couple of weeks ago. You know, when those ticket sales happened for that, was it All In or was it All Out, where they had like 40,000 people in queue?
The first All Out, when they had 74,500 people in line.
Out of control.
Tickets.
I mean, out of control if you think about it.
It blew everybody's mind. There's never been anything like it. And it's funny because it was like one of those things, it's like there's a moment in time, because I remember people going, they should just book a stadium in Chicago in 2 months. And it's like, no. It's timing. It's a timing thing. It was the right minute. It's like the match, yeah, Moxley and Kenny was a big, big match. It was just a moment in time where there was this furor. It's like the first time this rock band comes, it's like the second time they come, it may not be as big. Now, can they do something? Can they do a stadium show? I think that there is a time, and it even could be now, where they go in there and they have this fan base and just go, you know what, we are going to run a 40,000-seat stadium. And this is, and I think the first time they may just go in there, we are going to produce the biggest card in the history, you know, our WrestleMania, but don't use the term WrestleMania, obviously, and see what you do. I think that they would be, even the company itself would be surprised at how many people, if it's the biggest of the big, would go to a show like that just to be in the atmosphere and just because they think it's historic. I think the number's pretty high. Maybe when COVID's over, if that ever happens, because again, I'm not sure I would want to do that right now, but then again, WWE's doing, what is it, 5 stadium shows this year? I mean, so they think that they can, and it'll be an interesting test, you know, with WWE. You know, not so much, I think SummerSlam will do fine. WrestleMania is going to do, already, for sure, it's going to do fine. But that Money in the Bank in Vegas is a real interesting one, because it's like, it's not considered a major show. There's another one 4 weeks later, which is SummerSlam, that is the major show. And you're looking in a place that's like a big NFL stadium.
When they announced it, Dave, I was there, and I mean, there was such confusion with people that were in the building that they announced that Money in the Bank is going to be in that building. Where I don't think people, like, first of all, why are you running that building for Money in the Bank? You know, and everybody's now speculating, well, is there a bigger plan here? I was just very caught off guard when they put that on the screen. They said Money in the Bank, you know, we're returning, you know, next year for Money in the Bank, not even SummerSlam.
I think the idea was that Nick's idea, you know, because that was Nick Khan's idea, yeah. Just like the January 1st in Atlanta, is, you know, like holiday weekend, people will travel, people want to go to Vegas, and we can get people go, hey, you know, it's Vegas, Like, would they do Money in the Bank in St. Louis at a stadium? I think the answer is no.
Yeah.
Now, Royal Rumble in a stadium in St. Louis, yeah. But I think that the idea is it's a holiday weekend, and you can go, hey, we can go and see a WWE pay-per-view. Now, again, it's a test. I mean, maybe, you know, and how hot will WWE be this summer? I mean, there's so many things. I mean, we'll see. But the thing is, if they can do that, I would be very confident AEW could go in there and do, the problem with an outdoor show in Chicago, is Chicago in September. I mean, the weather could be fine, but the weather at night could be absolutely brutal. Vegas is better. Man, maybe Vegas is the place. You know, maybe they're booking that stadium every year with a proviso that we're in, and AEW can't go in with the idea that, hey, if we go in, I mean, Vegas is, to make sure that AEW can't get the May date at the stadium rather than MGM Grand.
Very interesting.
You know, something like that.
Yeah, very interesting.
Maybe, just make it, our friends at the stadium, we're going to do it. Don't book to these other people. Maybe that's part of the deal, too.
Well, listen, that's the story in New York, right? That's the story in New York with MSG. And AEW did 20,000, 19.8 legit.
It was a little over 20 in the building, but it was 18.3 paid.
18.3 paid.
Which is still a fantastic number.
Oh, my God. I was there. I've been in that building from the time I was a kid. My grandfather was a big tennis lover. We would go all the time to the U.S. Open. It's 6 minutes from my house. I went there. We walked in. I couldn't believe how slammed that place was. Really unique setup, too. It's a very unique building. That they can't run year round because of the weather and the way that the tennis association is. So they'll probably get maybe two shows out of there a year if they can. But, that's all because they were blocked out of MSG.
Yeah. Yeah. And they came up with something unique. And I mean, the first show there, that was also part of it, is they did a good job of advertising the first show in the New York market was going to be big. And it was in a venue that had never held wrestling. And they made that part of the thing. That show was a giant.
Held
success.
Anything, Dave? Held anything other than tennis? They ran. I think they did. So the story. I don't know if you know this, but this is what was said to me by someone in the city. The guy that ran the parks department didn't want to do anything other than tennis in that building. And the way that they have that lease agreement with the United States Tennis Association in the city is that I'm not 100% on this, but I think they just paid the taxes and it's a $1 lease for 99 years or whatever that deal would be. And whoever was running the parks department has veto power and didn't want to do anything. So someone new came and they're like, yeah, let's do something. Let's do something really cool in Flushing Meadow Park. This is all new, cool, new stuff. I would love to see other events in that building, but very interesting, a very unique building. Now that, New York has in the New York metro area, we have so many arenas now. It's out of control. It's not a one or two game shop anymore.
Yeah. You couldn't keep anyone out of the market that was strong enough because there's going to be an arena that's going to book them. Yeah.
Dave, I really appreciate you taking your time and coming on with me today.
Okay, this cool. I really enjoyed it.
No, always, I'd love to have you on more. I got to have Brian on again. This is, Wrestling Observer Live. This is your show. 20 some odd years ago, I tuned in one day and you and Brian were talking on IATA and it kind of changed the trajectory of my career. I keep telling you this. Every time I see you, I tell you this, and I'll keep telling you this, too. My whole life career, I would have been a lawyer if it wasn't for this. If it wasn't for Wrestling Observer Live, I would have been a lawyer. I want you to know that.
Wow. You're kind of hurting my feelings now, in a sense, that I derailed your life.
No, listen.
Derailed it for the best.
I could not complain at all. But, again, thanks a lot for coming on, as always.
Okay, cool. All right, we'll talk soon. Okay.
Always.
Okay.
Dave Meltzer, everybody, Wrestling Observer Live. No breaks today. We're steamrolling this, and I'd love to have Dave on more. I'm trying to find the cassette of the day WCW died. I mean, listen, I've heard that podcast a million times, but I want to just have the cassette. I think it would be really cool. I used to record it on my, it was like a Panasonic boombox that I had connected to my sound card, and I had it programmed on my computer through Real Player to record when the show started. And I probably had a bunch of cassettes, stacked. I got to find them. They're somewhere in my attic. But maybe I'll ask this guy about it, too. Maybe I'll ask this dude here. I got a friend here with me. Matt Ryan, Catalyst Wrestling.
There we go.
There you go. I boo-booed that one. I should know better.
You did. It's all right.
Matt's on with us to talk about GCW. Where can people find you? Because last time you came on, people absolutely loved you. And people were asking, like, where can we get more information on Matt?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at M Ryan Consulting. That is M Ryan Consulting. You can find my various gambling articles, different things I do, including work with SBN MMA over at Combat Culture, and also more info about Catalyst Wrestling, which you could pre-order Ewing right now at tinyurl.com/EwingVOD.
By the way, congratulations. You ran a great show in New York. The first time an NWA World's Heavyweight Champion has wrestled in New York City. It would have been 60 years ago, right?
It was first time in Brooklyn in 60 years.
First time
years.
In Brooklyn.
The NWA title, we'd have to do a little bit more research on it because NWA running in Long Island. Yeah. First time since Buddy Rogers versus Bruno Sammartino.
Long Island doesn't count as New York City, my friend. Long Island doesn't count as New York City.
Well, in the New York metro area, it's all one gigantic concentric circle. You were just talking about it with Dave, and also you were talking about Iyada. Like, in the same vein as you, I found live audio wrestling while staying at my uncle's house about 22 years ago or so. And then...
Because of the commercials on Iyada.
No, I found them and Meltzer at the same time. I found Wrestling Observer Live. I was like 10 years old.
So I have the same story as you, man. And I'm a little older than you, but I found them. I found live audio. Jeff Merrick and Dan the Mouth Labransky, the original crew. I found them because of Iyada. I think they had an add-on Iyada, and I think Dave maybe plugged it and that he would go on. They would do the Wrestling Observer Extra every Sunday, man. I would tune into Mojo Radio and listen to them. And here's a little trivia question for you, okay? And then we're gonna go back into wrestling. Do you remember what the show before live audio wrestling was called that would come on? Live audio wrestling would go on like what? 10 o'clock? 11 o'clock? What? I think it was like 11 o'clock or 10 o'clock. The show before.
You are pressing about 20 years of repressed trauma that I'm trying to dig through right now. Just every repressed childhood memory. Like the entire time my entire sixth grade class, there we go, NYU education, everybody, jumped me at recess. And I was a big ECW fan. I tried to climb the fence and New Jack off of the fence.
You tried to New Jack off the fence?
I was a fat child, so I really couldn't get up that high. But it was sixth grade was not a fun time. But that was around the time I found this side of the internet and listening to those Iyada shows.
Yeah.
And the first episode of The Law I ever found was the interview with Max Payne.
Oh my gosh!
Did you talk about that secret tape? I think so. Oh, this is so
that we never saw, right? We never got to see that full tape. Max Payne's tape.
There's a trailer of it on YouTube somewhere, though. If you look, you find the trailer for the video that never got released.
I've seen that trailer 5,000 times, and I'm hoping one day it shows up. But the show beforehand was Cloak and Dagger, and it was a conspiracy theory show.
Of course it was.
Little trivia.
Why wouldn't it be?
Little trivia here.
Of course you would know that.
Of course I would know that. So Matt, listen, you're on here. We don't really have a time limit. We don't have a high sign to go home. So we're not on the radio. We're doing this live on the internet. So it's fantastic. But I want to talk to you about GCW. And you know, I spoke to Dave about this. I think you were on hold. You kind of heard part of that conversation. But you know, being from New York, the Hammerstein Ballroom is a stunning, stunning venue for anything. Forget about wrestling. You can go see, you know, music acts, whatever. I think I saw Jane's Addiction there sometime in the late 90s, early 2000s, when they got back together.
Yeah, so like the early 2000s.
Probably
like
early 2000s.
After Lollapalooza, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, a very, very cool venue. It was built in 1902. It was obviously a ballroom. And then it turned into a Masonic temple at one point in the 40s. then it was utterly falling apart in the 70s. And I believe a church bought it. A Korean church bought it.
I do believe the Moonies bought it. The Moonies owned that building. And I think they owned the production studio like next door.
Interesting.
Manhattan Studios, which I think is where they used to tape Around the Horn before they moved everything down to D.C.
Very interesting.
Yeah, I know that because you would wait outside of Ring of Honor shows and you would see the loop for like Around the Horn and all the things they shop there.
Oh, very cool. So, I mean, listen, you've been in that venue 5,000 times. So have I. What do you think this means for GCW to be running this? What needs to happen for this to become a total success. And I'm not saying a success as far as pro wrestling, like us watching and thinking like, okay, you know what, they had some good matches. I'm saying an overall success, because I fear, and I'm not knock at Brett. We interviewed Brett Lauderdale on the show on We're Live Pal. Nice guy. I'm hoping this goes off without any issues. But my big fear is that this turns into an ECW pay-per-view. As far as the production, you know, production, stress of production.
I feel like, no, I was in production rooms for Ring of Honor during the Go Fight Live days. So I've seen what can go wrong and go right with situations like that. And on, you know, when you're running a production in New York City and you have a production truck, automatically your costs skyrocket. Everything about what you're doing, you have to rent the truck, you have to deal with the city to get the space for the production truck. If you go to any TV tapings outside of Catalyst Wrestling, because we do everything live, we do everything in post, but if you go to an MLW show, Impact Wrestling, anytime they ran the Melrose Ballroom, and you know, especially with the Hammerstein, on the other side of the building is where they're going to have to park the broadcast truck. So automatically those costs go up. You're paying for satellite time. You're paying for all those extra conditional costs. And when you're playing with house money, like Brett and GCW, they sold the building out before a match. So
how long did it take? I mean, it wasn't like 30 seconds instant, but it was shockingly, and again, not shocking because they don't do good stuff. Shocking because look at the climate that we're in right now, right? The hardest thing to do is sell tickets.
Yeah.
Especially to a live event. In a market.
In New York City, too.
In a market that's saturated with wrestling. I mean, 20, what did they do? 2,600 tickets? I mean, I think it's more than ECW ever did.
It's the biggest wrestling house, I believe, in the history of the Hammerstein Ballroom.
Very fascinating. For a virtually a unknown organization. And again, I'm not saying that disparagingly whatsoever. A virtually unknown to the mainstream, with no TV, they are putting on a pay-per-view tonight from an iconic building with a list of talent that goes from not only AEW, you know, AEW talent, Ring of Honor talent. You got Homicide, which Homicide wrestles for you.
Yes,
and he, you know, I think this is a very unique moment that we're going to look back at this, you know, in 10 years, and there's going to be a lot of these YouTube videos, if YouTube's still around in 10 years, I would imagine, but you're going to have a lot of these reminiscent moments of like, you know, they put on a fantastic show, and it'll maybe be looked at like how those one night stands were looked at in that building.
Yeah, tonight's the high watermark, I think, for independent pro wrestling in this country. You take a look at everything that's happened since the onset of the pandemic and the way the professional wrestling industry, and we talked about it the first time I was on the show, just the having to deal with everything going on in American society, going on in terms of travel, transportation, dealing with all the protocols. I know running events in New York City, COVID protocols are at the highest, and the level of need for talent and production staff and all these people to be vaccinated. And then you throw on top of that the New York State Athletic Commission being involved tonight, GCW having to go within those rules of the New York State Athletic Commission. There's a lot of interesting variables heading into the show tonight, but if you've tracked GCW's course over the last few years, you can see how they've been able to survive, adapt, and kind of change the way a lot of people look at the industry. And they've been able to cultivate that same cult of personality that we saw in Smoky Mountain and ECW in the early 90s. They were able to grab onto a concept and grab onto talent and curate this vibe, this feeling that you're not going to get at other places. A lot of places are going to try to replicate that because it's endemic in the industry. Like, you take a look at what's the most successful thing out there, and you're going to try to find ways to make that happen. We saw it with the Attitude Era. We saw it exactly happen because of what was going on in ECW. WWE was able to transpose that, whether people want to say that out loud or not.
It was also the times, right? It was, yeah. And I always bring this up, that, you know, the success of wrestling in the 90s was directly correlated to the to mainstream anti-culture, like the whole, you know, everything was in your face, the whole MTV generation. It was, Howard Stern, extreme sports, pro wrestling, MTV, like all of this goes hand in hand with the culture shift that we saw. And WWE was smart enough to recognize whoever it was that pointed to Vince. If it's Vince Russo, kudos to him. Hey, dude, we need to go in a different direction because, you know, these bright colors and the, the goody two shoes characters are not going to go far. And we saw what created from there. I mean, we're here because of that boom. We wouldn't be here doing this.
No. Yeah.
Which is wild to think. So, Matt, listen, independent wrestling, you know, where do you think we're going to be by the end of the year?
It's something you really can't forecast.
Because you had a pretty good house for your last show.
Thank you. Yeah, no, we had a really successful event at the Muse over in Bushwick right off the L train. We had Trevor Murdoch on the card. We had Josh Woods, two world, technically world title holders, obviously the NW World's title, but the Pure title, I believe, would have a world title distinction in my opinion, but I am not in charge of making that up. I'm not in PWI, so I don't really get to make those distinctions. For me, yeah, what we did just 8 days ago at the Muse in Brooklyn was a great night, a great event. I'm excited to start airing that on Catalyst TV, and also we're doing a long form VOD of that, and you'll be getting your copy, obviously.
Oh, thank you very much.
To watch and review.
Now I want it. I want it on VHS.
Okay, I'll see what I can do.
If you could get me that thing on VHS, it'll make my day. I want my wrestling on VHS now.
Okay, I'll see what I can do. I'll make a few calls.
You know how like everybody got into vinyl a couple of years ago? Like everybody's all about vinyl. It became really hip. Vinyl sales were like 500 times over the year before. I want VHS to make a comeback. That's
you
my
just,
goal.
You just love physical media. That's I just, love physical that's your media. Bag. That's
do you
your
know,
bag.
I have no chairs in my house, just AOL 4.0 discs. We just sit on them. I stack them and I just sit on AOL 4.0 discs. That's where I'm at right now.
You're using floppies as insulation.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
You're just getting
and
collecting
half,
all the old floppy disks, and you're just staple gunning them to the wall to save on heating costs.
I've lost my mind, Matt. What do you want? But what do you like next year? You know, let's say let's go to like November next year, 2022, right?
Things 2023.
Let's go
November of
the
this
year.
Year.
Yeah, let's go November this year. Where do you think wrestling is going to be as far as a whole? Do you think it's With the assumption that things are opening up and things are going back to normal, and which I anticipate as far as we can.
Yeah.
But where do you see professional wrestling falling as far as, you know, is it a hot commodity? Is it a hot ticket?
You and Dave were talking about it earlier, and also it's ridiculous that I can point to reference of a conversation Dave Meltzer had on the same show I'm on. That is weird to me. But you and Dave were talking about it earlier, the idea of a third national promotion. I think this is the Kool-Aid acid test for it. This is the acid test for a third promotion in the United States. You see Jeff Jarrett involved. You see the heavy push from the
F. Thank God Jeff's involved. Thank God.
Smartest man in wrestling.
Smartest man in wrestling.
having Jeff Jarrett on that card, you've seen the Save with Conrad graphic on the GCW canvas numerous times over the past year.
Oh, I thought you meant for tonight. I thought you meant for
tonight.
I don't
know if it's on tonight or not. I have to watch football tonight for professional reasons, but I will be keeping tabs on the show tonight. But when it comes to for GCW, this is the big proving ground for independent wrestling as a whole. This is the dance. You know, you make that joke all the time about Paul Heyman in Beyond the Mat. This is that for GCW and also for independents as a whole, because this is potentially a brand new audience. This is exactly how I found ECW. I found it because it was randomly on pay-per-view back in the late 90s when you had a black box and you were able to find things without paying for them. God bless the 1990s in that regard.
What, those big Pioneer ones?
No. Oh, it was a Pioneer, though.
It was a Pioneer.
Welcome to New York City Live with Andrew Zarian and Matt Ryan.
Next thing, we're going to be talking about the Time Warner Cable situation of 1993. That's what's coming up next. No, but, I mean, This has been a big thing because there's so much abundant talent, great talent available right now that has nowhere to go. You have MLW, you have New Japan, you have GCW, Ring of Honor, AEW, WWE, NXT, and then everybody else that could potentially become competitive. You know, when we're saying a third, we don't mean you know, somebody on TV or Impact. I forgot to mention them, of course, on this, but they all have national exposure, but yeah. None of them have, other than AEW and WWE, none of them have that key channel.
And none of them are on prime time on a weeknight on a major cable company.
I can't see it happening. I hope I'm wrong.
You say that, but let's take a look at MMA for a second and how Bellator and PFL have been able to survive, and in Bellator's case, thrive off the fact that Bellator is owned by Paramount, by Viacom.
Yeah, but PFL also has hundreds of millions of dollars getting dumped into it for whatever reason when they can't, you know.
But you can point towards the idea in the conversation of content. This is where the media studies nerd in me really comes into the conversation. And you take a look at demos, and you take a look at the strong audience that has been developed through Fight, through IWTV. You can make a case. You can build out a case study to why a third national major broadcast brand could exist in 2022. GCW is a great test for that. I know Brett has brought up the fact that he's not going to do TV and he's not going to be on TV anymore. You know, they're not looking at TV as an option.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's great for them. It's their identity. It's their brand.
If they want to live on the internet and have, you know, matches on there and you don't get the full show. I think it is instrumental with your marketing when you're coming up with a new product. That you kind of want to be careful with overexposing, and I think Brett's a smart guy, and I think he knows that. I think he also knows that some of the stigmas that go against the GCW, that they're too hardcore, they glorify death matches, which obviously is always going to be a part in them, but when you are now on pay-per-view, national exposure, in the Hammerstein, in New York City, you know, that cannot become, you cannot be a deathmatch company. You could have that element, but you have to become something very different, and I think we've seen the shift with GCW already.
Yeah.
We've seen how they've shifted away from you know, the obviously the fluorescent tubes are going to be there always, but not every match is that.
Yeah, I think the shift started in 2020. You started to see more story. You started to see a different set of people. You saw a bigger variety of talent in terms of the roster. They're rotating talent in and out. They've done an excellent job in making people like Effie and Allie Catch certifiable stars in that company. And they have undeniable personalities, undeniable work ethic and skill, but something about GCW, they have a secret sauce in being able to turn wrestlers into cult heroes.
I love that there's a place for alternative programming, even within wrestling, and wrestling is alternative programming.
Yeah, and you talk about niches, and you and I have had this conversation before about audiences and how there are so many different layers of audiences. It's like a dip at a Super Bowl party. Like, you're going to have all of these different layers, and you're going to have to, if you really, really, really want the refried bean part of it, or you really, really want the sour cream part of it, you have to dig deep. And that's kind of what pro wrestling has become. Yeah. It's a variety show. It's what WWE wants to be. They want to be the variety show, the big tent that everybody comes into. And you see that in their programming, but it's not connecting with a large segment of the audience. A lot of people our age and younger, mainly because that identity isn't there. There's nothing that emotionally attracts or attaches someone to a lot of people on the roster. Yeah. And you see on other companies, like you look at AEW, certainly GCW, and what we try to do at Catalyst Wrestling is give a plausible reason why you should understand why wrestlers are doing what they're doing. Mox and Homicide is happening because D won a battle royal, obviously. But it's also a proving ground for Homicide, a guy who won a world title against the best wrestler on the planet in that very building. And we were talking about the Hammerstein before. I have called the match upstairs in the Manhattan Center. I called a Ring of Honor match in the Manhattan Center. I have been ringside for Ring of Honor on both sides of the guardrail in the Hammerstein Ballroom. That building.
Special.
For people who love wrestling in New York is the building. Now, the Melrose Ballroom, great, great building. Terminal 5 for pro wrestling was a terrible decision.
You know, I'm the only one. Okay, and we're getting nitty gritty, and we're going to wrap it up soon anyway, but we're getting nitty gritty. I am the only one that has had a great experience watching wrestling at Terminal 5. We were right on that balcony on the second floor, and I just parked myself, and I grabbed a bunch of chairs. I bribed some guy that works there to bring me chairs. I gave him like 40 bucks. He brought a bunch of chairs. My wife was pregnant at the time, and we sat there. We had the best time watching Ring of Honor at Terminal 5 while everybody else was utterly miserable, having the worst experience. Because really, the reality is, if you're not parked in front of a guardrail, you cannot see anything in that venue.
There's no stacking.
By the way, wasn't that Exit? Wasn't that a nightclub? That was Exit, I think.
It used to be a nightclub.
It used to be a nightclub years ago.
I was there for Gaslight Anthem and Frank Turner shows before that.
Wonderful.
So.
Listen, before we wrap it up, obviously you hit the nail on the head. I hope that GCW has a fantastic night. This changes a lot for pro wrestling. I think the importance on this being a successful show really speaks for independent wrestling, because this is going to give opportunities to people. They have advertisers on this thing. They have some great advertisers on this thing. And no matter how many tickets you're going to sell at the door, you're not going to be able to make up a card like this. You're going to have to buy it on pay-per-view, which I encourage you guys to do it. If you're a fan of pro wrestling, independent wrestling, I encourage you guys to go check it out. Get it on Fight. Get it on traditional pay-per-view, because the success of this is going to go a long way for other companies as well. And I anticipate we're going to see more of these guys attempt traditional cable this year, because that is a big hurdle. And the success rate of having your show on traditional pay-per-view, the odds are against you to have a successful show. Always. Impact was doing 10,000, 20,000, 40,000 buys. WCW at the end, and this is, you're talking about a product that was on TV for a long, long time, was doing about 60,000 buys. This is a, it's a very difficult hurdle to go over. And if they do something, what would be a successful number to you, Matt?
I think 10, because you have to counter Fight into it, because they're dual syndicating.
They're
the
dual syndicating, yeah.
So you can look at it from a perspective of 10,000 overall buys. And I'm not saying that they can't do more than that. I'm just saying like a valuable expectation is about 10,000 buys a month.
Listen, I think that's great if they do 10,000 buys. I think that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
You can make it
that at $24.95 a pop after you give your cut to the pay-per-view provider. That covers expenses, and that could be for a company like Cat. Yeah, you broke even and then some. But then some. You take a look at this card tonight. You take a look at the different generations and the different styles of wrestling on the show, and it truly is like it's
Jeff Jarrett's on it, dude. Jarrett's on it. It's going to do fantastic. Matt, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at MRyanConsulting, and I am on the SBN MMA platform, Combat Culture, for every UFC pay-per-view. I call the action for all of them. And you can also follow Catalyst Wrestling across social media at Catalyst Wrestle. Please download the app Rizzle for absolutely free. We're doing something at Catalyst Wrestling for New Japan Pro Wrestling Strong athlete and GCW athlete Chris Dickinson. If you download Rizzle and you make a video that says help Dirty Daddy, we're donating up to $500 to every video that's posted. We're getting towards our goal. We're donating all of that money towards Chris's recovery. So if you download Rizzle, that's RIZZLE, and you put the video hashtag help Dirty Daddy, you let us know you posted that video on social media. We're donating $1 for every post to Chris Dickinson's recovery. Thanks to our friends, our technology partners at Rizzle. And if you want to watch Catalyst Wrestling every single week, we're on the Fight Network. We're on Gas Digital. And also, you can watch us on YouTube. We drop new episodes on YouTube every single Thursday. So subscribe to the Catalyst Wrestling YouTube channel. And if you want to watch the whole show uncensored for just 10 bucks, go to tinyurl.com/ewingvod. Our most recent show featured the ROH Pure Champion Josh Woods going up against Darius Carter, Masha Slamovich from Impact Wrestling going up against Valentina Vasquez. We also had a homicide in action teaming with the NWA World's Heavyweight Champion Trevor Murdoch against Colby Carino and Wrecking Ball Ligurski. A lot of great matches on that card. O'Shea Edwards going up against HC Loke, two ROH guys. with their own legacies and obviously an ECW original and HC Loke. So a big night in our return home to New York City. You can buy that right now. Pre-order that at tinyurl.com/EwingVOD.
God, you are a pro wrestling promoter. It is engraved in you. It is engraved. You know what? I just checked my pockets. I'm missing money. I think you just slipped your hand in here and just took it without me even knowing it over 10 miles.
Right,
unbelievable.
Baby.
Unbelievable.
That's right.
Guys, that's it for this week. We'll be back next week. Listen, I believe we're going to be on Sports Byline next week, but we're back. If we're not on Sports Byline, we'll be here and we'll do a little bit of an extended show. So it'll be a lot of fun. We will see you guys next time. Take care.
Syndication now.